Hello and welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast, a show where we bring you insights from media industry experts to help journalists do their jobs better. I'm your host, Jacob Granger. Today, we'll be talking about how to future-proof your newsroom by focusing on what matters to your audience. News companies cannot be everything to everyone. Not anymore, anyway. In a world of overabundant information and services, news companies need to redouble their efforts to build lasting relationships with their audience. Here to tell us how is Lucy Kuhn, an all-round expert on newsroom strategy, leadership, and culture. She's a strategic advisor, a senior research fellow at the Reuters Institute, and an accomplished author, recently publishing the third edition of her book, Strategic Management in the Media. And we had the pleasure of speaking to her on a LinkedIn Live session recently, where we explored how the media landscape is changing, how news companies must adapt, and we also answered some of our readers' questions too. Today we bring you the highlights and takeaways with one key message: do not underestimate the importance of your journalist and your news brand. Don't go anywhere.
The media industry now bears no relation to the media industry 20 years ago. So this whole concept of the mass media that we grew up with, that universities work with, that regulators work with, doesn't really apply.
That's Lucy Kuhn. She's explaining why the modern media company can no longer cling to the something for everyone model of the past. Part of the reason why is that tech platforms now occupy that role. And like it or lump it, it's time that news organizations accepted it.
Our biggest competitors are now outside the sector, and they are what is known as asymmetric competitors. They're not competing on the same dimensions. If you take the creator economy, if you take the social networks, they're massively interested in content, but it's not the intrinsic value and quality of that content. It's that content's ability to keep people on the platform, to fuel network effects, to build deep relationships.
In her new book, Lucy spoke to many experts about what this means for news and media companies. Long story short, tech platforms are shaping audience habits, and news organizations would be wise to pay close attention.
I talked to a lot of experts for this book, and there were two really interesting comments I had really very recently. One, who's an expert on the social media influencer economy, the creator economy, who talked about, you know, quality there is not about the nature of the content, it's the social stuff around it. It's the depth of relationship, not the breadth of the audience. And you can monetize massively if you have that relationship. And then the second was from an editor-in-chief in India who was really saying this, you know, India has a really, really young population. So we can learn an awful lot about news from looking at what kind of solutions players there are finding, and talking about the fact that the rules of journalism that we've created for ourselves really don't appeal that much. His sense was younger audiences don't really want that type of journalism. So I think there's a challenge. And even if I look inside organizations, if I work with them, if I research them, they tend to be very interested in their competitive set, direct competitors in their market, in their geographic field. And I think we need to really acknowledge attention and energy is moving elsewhere. And also we need to understand what that means for our products, because essentially these new competitors are really setting the standards for the products. And if you look at it, it's kind of one app, one icon that performs really, really well, whatever the geography, whatever the screen, and one goal, get you and keep you. And that they're really setting the standards, they're setting customer expectations. And I think we have to really adapt to that. And if we look at the players that are actually attracting the investment, that are doing really well, they are really built around this reality. So if you take Axios, I was talking to someone there who said, you know, really, we are a media experience that is based around how people discover, read and understand information now.
News organizations are strategically outgunned right now. So they have to play their cards well, and they have two valuable assets: talent and brand.
Firstly, the caliber of its people. I mean, super, super smart individuals who choose to work in the media industry often take a hit to their earning capability because they're so committed to the industry. So smart people, hugely committed. It's an asset other sectors would kill for. And I think also the depth of the brands, actually, it's very, very hard to create a new media brand. You see Semaphore struggling to do that, right? These are absolute kind of heritage legacy brands that are anchored in people's consciousness. That is, you know, in strategic terms, that's a non-replicable strategic asset. And I think we really need to care and nourish and curate and take care of our brands much more than we do.
It's the smaller and new entrants that can strategize differently. But don't write off the larger legacy titles just yet. Their names have serious weight, but they need to use it wisely, and many are. The New York Times, famous for its successful digital subscription bundle, works for many of the same reasons as other successful digital services. They keep people locked in.
The New York Times, famously its bundle, so news, cooking, games, The Athletic, and there was that chart that went viral a couple of weeks back that showed that actually more subscribers are coming in for games than the news. If you get this right, customers pay more, they stay longer, their engagement is deeper, and they churn less. So you get this kind of household lock-in, right? So one member of the household might say, I've had enough of the news, I can't read it anymore. But someone else will say, yeah, I'm using the games. Or someone else might say, I need the recipes, I need the sports results. So you get this kind of lock-in effect.
There is one problem that news organisations come up against with subscriptions, though. They hit a plateau. Research by the Reuters Institute last year found that news subscriptions had stopped growing in 2021 after the COVID bump. And across 20 markets, 17% of people were paying for news in some way, 13% from news subscriptions specifically. Trials and low-cost offers can win a lot of people over, as well as we just discussed, bundling in all sorts of other perks and services. However, when the offer expires and the full price comes around, many people balk at the price tag.
So we had, and I say this word with due respect, but we had this kind of business gift during COVID where subscriptions went up. And what we've seen now is that growth is stalling, and the Reuters Institute, where I'm lucky enough to, you know, collaborate, be part of the team there, for the last 3 or 4 years in the digital news report, willingness to pay for news subscriptions is stuck around 17-18% in most mature markets, right? So that means there is a ceiling, and you can push like crazy against that, but the more you push, the higher your churn goes. And if you're in that state, every new acquisition is very, very expensive.
Bundling also helps to address news avoidance, a persistent problem in the news. According to the last digital news report by the Reuters Institute, 36% of people are selective news avoiders, meaning they sometimes or often avoid the news. There's a number of factors driving this, but the negative news cycle is one of the leading reasons. However, if news organisations can offer more than news in a wider bundle, then at least the door is left open for them to return to the news.
I do think it comes down to really, really understanding your audience and develop a kind of visceral understanding of them in a broader sense. So if you look at what the New York Times has done, it's gone into news adjacent areas. So it's still got them. And then hopefully it can kind of bring them back to the news journalism when it needs to. But I do think it does start with understanding how can you become really, really vital part of your audience's lives.
Just a quick one from me, and then we'll get back to the show. Join us on the 22nd of May at our digital journalism conference, NewsRewired, in London. We've got plenty of expert talks on generative AI, newsletters, young audiences, and much, much more. I'll be there, and I'd love to see you there too. Head over to newswired.com for the full agenda and to secure your place today. On the other side of the spectrum, news organisations are also leaning into niche verticals. It's a step away from the mass media model and a step towards leaning into specialities and, you guessed it, relationships and loyalty.
You take an area of content that you decide you're going to own, you're going to outperform everyone, and then you build up from a kind of consumer product into the kind of business audience. You add the kind of pro layer to that. And the advantage of the so-called niche verticals is that you have a deeper relationship, you've got lower price sensitivity because you've got unique information that you have to have, and you can start doing events, you can do sponsorship, you've got kind of more revenue streams. And if you get it right, you've got a really interesting organization. You've got a handful of star writers, a handful of star product people, but it's very lean. Again, if we look at the startups at the moment, the Pucks, the Hills, the Informations, they tend to be adopting that model at the moment.
So on one hand, we have the problems of news avoidance and subscription ceilings. And on the other, we have the potential of niche verticals and bundles. What does all of this point towards? For Lucy, it's that news doesn't quite fit the markets that it's operating in right now.
The real issue is product market fit. I think we are still cramping ourselves to fit a product that developed over the last 100 years into a market that's now very different. What I have seen in organizations where they've pushed really aggressively and intelligently in a focused way to increase subscriptions, there is a point where you're just increasing churn. And it just gets a very expensive game. My reframing of this is actually, I think it's a product market fit challenge.
What this means for news organisations is that it is more important than ever that readers have their needs met and that news organisations form direct relationships. The starting point should be this question: how can we add value to the lives of our readers? This is something within marketing known as outside-in thinking.
How can we create a product that is so important to them? They spend more time with us. We're absolutely essential to their lives. We have this kind of visceral connection, and then we can charge for what we do. And that sounds like a relatively straightforward approach, but what follows after that has to be quite disciplined. And I think the really interesting bit in that is if you're coming into that approach from a world where the mass media started, where you had one product that tried to do something for everyone, is you're starting to fill it and sift and reduce and focus. And essentially what you have to work out and then really get broad acceptance for is who are the segments that really, really matter to us? By extension, what doesn't matter to us anymore? Within that section, understand who you're competing with. And I think that's tricky. I love that comment from Reed Hastings years ago, I think it was 2019, in an earnings report where he basically said, you know, we are competing with and losing to Fortnite. So he didn't really take another player in stream media. He took a games company. I think he later adjusted that to sleep. Who are we competing with? And then the two really nuggets that generate gold is if you can work out points of parity. So where is it okay for our content to be exactly the same as everyone else's? But where are the points of differentiation? What are the areas where we are going to outperform everyone? And I think eliminate the kind of squidgy, undifferentiated middle. And actually, if you look at any of the data work done in organizations, you know, the articles, the output, the content that audiences don't care about, often actually inside the organization, people didn't care about it anyway.
So focus on what you must do differently and what you can do the same as others, but don't worry so much about all the generic stuff that generative AI is going to end up doing anyway, if it hasn't already done so. By all means, consider how generative AI can assist your business model, but it is better to be disrupted by it yourself than by somebody else. And now is the time to poke around and see what it can do, because we are still at the very early stages of its application.
We are kind of at the dial-up modem stage of this whole game. So, you know, AOL's chat room. So it's very hard to re-engineer an organization around it. This is a really big disruption right into the heart of the media sector, because if you look at generative AI, it's good for anything that deals with content creation, anything that deals with data sets, anything that deals with knowledge work, you know, creative production, bang, we're kind of in the bullseye. So if you look at it from that lens, increased threat of new entrants, because entry barriers have gone, anyone can produce what looks on the surface like very professional content. So all of those barriers around these kind of craft skills that we have invested massively in creating and acquiring and building that are actually very valuable, that value has been kind of taken away. That means there'll be more content. That means there'll be more options for consumers, more products to choose from. And now, as you said, it's very easy to switch out the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Economist, to the Financial Times. I mean, we can do that in a couple of minutes, right? That means there's less scope to increase prices. And that's something we all need to do, because digital subscriptions, you know, people are quite promiscuous. So that, I think, is the bad news. But I think the good news is that kind of shock and frenzy and freak out stage is over. Now we're looking at kind of incremental adaptation. We're going into kind of building it into our core processes, you know, using it intelligently. So my sense is what we need to do is really eliminate any kind of undifferentiated activities from lots of perspectives. And I think really revisit first principles, revisit this product market fit issue and look at how can Gen AI help with that. And I think if we don't, a disruptor will. So it behoves us to do it, actually.
So what else does the future hold then? News organisations should think about their audiences of the future too, but the trouble is that young audiences have been shaped by modern platforms and they have very different wants and needs than older audiences. What's the best way to get hold of them then? It's your own young talent and staff.
The future is about these new content formats, right? What you see is the shift in terms of jobs, especially in news organisations, is very much reflecting the new realities of the environment we're in. I was talking to an editor last week who said, she didn't think they're going to be hiring any more kind of classic journalists in the coming year. but they will be hiring journalists who can work in different formats with different roles, who understand how these metrics work. And I think that's really the key. I really hope we're not going to see a massive kind of cost out in terms of newsrooms, in terms of people. I think that would be a tragedy. But I do think it's going to be like an amoeba. We're going to be an expansion in new roles and a contraction in other roles. And I think for what we said for organizations applies equally for people. You really have to know your lane. You have to be distinctive in an area, have a voice, have a, you know, exceptional skill, or have an exceptional specialism in an area. And I think actually the market for that is only going to grow. I mean, even if you look at the new coverage of politics, of these kind of, you know, very discursive podcasts, it's about smart individuals who are very approachable, who really know their field.
So what's the big takeaway from today? Make sure you understand one distinctive element of your news brand and lean hard into that.
It's get to grips with the strategic reality. Understand the platforms are there, the social networks are there. That is where attention is. There's a lot to be learned in terms of how they communicate, what content works. Differentiate. We have to differentiate more. We grew up this mass media, something for everyone. That just doesn't work anymore. And I think also for individuals around building your network, really get to know people also in adjacent fields. And what actually the one thing I love about generative AI is it puts this enormous premium on learning. We are actually at another pivot moment. Everything is a bit unfrozen, but we really need to kind of decode the dots, find the signal in the noise. And I think that's really what we need to focus on right now.
So news organizations have their hands full right now. We are living in times of dominance from tech platforms, divided audience attention, and disruption to the business model. But what will help news brands survive? Accepting that while they can't be something for everyone, they can be everything for someone. But what did you take from today? I would love to know. Find me on LinkedIn, Twitter/X@JPGJournalism, or email me at jacob@journalism.co.uk. You can check out all of our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search and subscribe to the journalism.co.uk podcast. But that's all we have time for this week. I've been your host, Jacob Granger. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.